Grace, mercy, and peace from God our Father and from our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. A few years ago, there was an extensive study done of millennials. Millennials are people that were born in the 80s and 90s, people that are really just coming into their own now. These researchers wanted to understand what makes millennials tick. What do they believe? What values do they have? What questions do they have? It was an extensive survey done of more than 10,000 millennials. But the researchers decided to report this data in a kind of interesting, creative way. They reported it as a series of questions. Questions millennials are asking. When I saw this list, I thought, you know, these are really good questions, but more than all, these are all questions the Bible answers powerfully and directly. So I did a sermon series on this, and the sermon I'm going to share with you today is the second in that series. It addresses the second most common question millennials ask, and it's this. What's my purpose? Why am I here? It's a good question. I give millennials a lot of credit for asking that question in a focused, deliberate kind of way. And it's a question the Bible answers all over the place. A lot of texts I could have chosen, but I decided to pick one of the parables of Jesus. Probably his best-known parable. It's recorded in Luke chapter 10, and it reads as follows. A certain man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he fell among thieves. He stripped him and beat him and departed, leaving him half dead. Now by chance, a priest was going down that same road. And when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So likewise a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, he too passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, a foreigner, when he journeyed, came to where the man was, and when he saw him, he had compassion. He went to him and bound up his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. And then he set him on his own animal and brought him to the inn and took care of him. And the next day he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper, saying, take care of him, and whatever more you spend, I will repay you when I return. What's my purpose? Why did God put me on this earth? It's a good question. A question all of us should be asking. And then working that our life jives with that answer. Now, it seems to me there are a lot of wrong answers, a lot of bad answers, and I doubt people actually choose these. I just think they kind of fall into them as default positions. I think for some people, the purpose in their life is to do as little as possible. Purpose in their life is to get as much as they can. They see their life as being essentially a kind of parasite. The motto is, the world owes me a living. And so they look to the government or their parents or whoever else will support them so that they can do as little as they possibly can. You may think I'm exaggerating, but listen to any political speech by any political candidate running for any political office, and I'll tell you the central theme will be, I'm going to give you this, and don't worry about you doing anything. I'm going to pour all this money into your lap, don't worry about ever paying it back. Appeals who see themselves as essentially a parasite, essentially living off of others.
approach, especially the book of Proverbs.
I think there are other people who see their life as gaining the most stuff they can. Their motto is, he who dies with the most toys wins. Now, what makes these people decisively different than the first group is that this group is willing to work for it. They're willing to work really hard for it. But their goal, their purpose in life is to get ever more, still more stuff. Until the three-car garage is filled to the brim with all kinds of stuff they don't even remember anymore. Just more stuff. The Bible condemns that approach too. Very clear, very bold in particular in the book of Ecclesiastes. And then there are those who see themselves as, well, kind of dictators. They think the purpose of their life is to get other people to do stuff. Pointing their fingers at others. You know, the government should do this. The homeowners association should do this. The church should do this. My neighbor should do this. The church should do this. Their whole philosophy in life is to tell other people what to do, and they never point that finger back at themselves. You don't believe it? Just go to Facebook. Go to almost any blog. All filled with, this is what you should do. And maybe most pathetic of all are those whose philosophy in life is to live day to day. You think, well, you know, you get up in the morning and you shower and eat, you dress, go to work, do as little work as you get away with, drive home, have dinner, watch TV, go to bed, and repeat the same thing every day until you die. There are a lot of people where it seems that's their answer to the question. That's their purpose in life, just living until they die. I think there are a lot of other bad answers to the question. The Bible has a very direct answer to the question. It is both obvious and simple, and yet profound and difficult. What's my purpose? Why am I here? To love. Jesus said, this is my commandment, that you love one another. Perhaps I could paraphrase Jesus. I don't think he would mind. This is your purpose, to love one another. Jesus said, I have come not to be served, but to serve, and to give my life for others. First John, we read, beloved, you who are loved, let us then love one another. For love is from God, and whoever loves has been born of God and knows God. Beloved, since God is love, we ought to love one another. And if we love one another, God abides in us, and his love is revealed through us. So we have come to know and to believe the love that God has for us all. God is love, and whoever abides in love abides in God, and God abides in him. Now, I want to emphasize that this is meant to be personal. It's not about what someone else should do. It's about me getting off my lazy derriere and past my self-centeredness and actually doing something for someone generous donation to the Starving Children of Zambia Fund. That's good. I'm sure Jesus is 100% in favor of it, but that is not what I'm talking about. Love is a person. Love is something I do. It's about friends and family and neighbors and co-workers and fellow church people. It's personal in nature. Isaiah 6:8 says, I heard the voice of Jesus say to me, whom shall I send? Who will go? And I answered him, here I am, Lord. Send me. The evangelist Dwight Moody wrote of these words, I am only one person, but I am one person. I cannot do everything, but I can do something. I cannot help everyone, but I can help someone. What I can do, I will do, by the grace of God, with the love of God. It's why God put me on this. Personal love. Family, friends, neighbors, relatives, co-workers, church. Some of you know the story of Mrs. Ida Ryberg. Mrs. Ryberg was a seasoned, well-experienced public school teacher, currently assigned to the fourth grade. But while some teachers grow in their appreciation of that noble profession, Mrs. Ryberg just grew tired and was counting the years until her retirement. It was the last day of school before the obligatory holiday party and before the Christmas break, and so she was conducting that party. All the children brought her gifts, the usual things, little bottles of Avon perfume, coffee mugs with world's greatest teacher inscribed on them, some homemade goodies. All the usual things. And Mrs. Ryberg opened each one rather carefully, making an appropriate but rarely sincere note of appreciation. And she would take the little samples of perfume and she would put a little bit on her arm, and all the little girls would come up. She eventually made her way to a gift that obviously had been wrapped by the child himself. It was from Teddy, an underachiever in her class. As she opened the present, she discovered a half-empty bottle of perfume and a rhinestone bracelet with several of the stones missing. It's the kind of thing a child might find at the bottom of a bathroom drawer, or maybe even in the trash. But Mrs. Ryberg wouldn't think of embarrassing the little boy, and so she treated it like all the rest. Well, the bell rang, and the kids ran out of the classroom for recess, and Mrs. Ryberg went next door over to the third grade teacher, the teacher that had Teddy the year before, and told her about this unusual gift. And the third grade teacher began to tell her a little bit about Teddy. She said that when Teddy was in the first grade, he was a happy, well-adjusted kid, did well in school. But in the second grade, his mother was diagnosed with cancer, and she died 3 months later. And Teddy took it really hard. the third grade teacher continued with the story, but Mrs. Reiber really wasn't listening. There was something stirring in the heart of Mrs. Reiber. Something that frankly hadn't stirred in a long time. Maybe it was the passing of her own mother a few months earlier. Maybe it was just Christmas holidays. But she began to think of Teddy in a whole new way. The bell rang, and the kids came back into the classroom, and Mrs. Reiber came in and resumed her seat, the kids their desks. And then, as they were doing that, she watched the children, and especially Teddy. And as she did, she offered up a prayer to God, that God would help her. At the end of the day, the final bell rang, and kids ran out for the winter break, but for some reason, Teddy hung behind. "Thanks again for the perfume and the bracelet," Mrs. Reiber said. A rare smile came to the boy's face. "Thank you. They were my mother's." And he came up and whiffed the little spot where she had put the sample of perfume. "The perfume makes you smell like her." "Thank you," Mrs. Reiber said. All during Christmas break, Mrs. Reiber thought about Teddy. She went to this teacher's supply store, and she bought some books and workbooks and things, and she made this lesson plan of how she was going to help Teddy, how she was going to get him back up to speed. For the first time in years, she looked forward to school resuming in January. And Mrs. Reiber poured everything she had into that little book. All of her years of experience, her expertise, her skills. She worked with him, she tutored him, she loved him. And Teddy thrived. That next summer, Teddy and his dad moved to the other side of town. Teddy went to a different elementary school. For years, they didn't see each other. She often thought of him, but figured that he probably had forgotten all about her. But 6 years later, now retired, the school she had worked at forwarded a piece of mail to her. It was a high school invitation. When she opened it, she saw it was from Teddy. And Teddy had written a little note inside. It said, "Dear Mrs. Reiber, I graduate soon, the valedictorian of my class. Can you believe it? I'd be honored if you would attend my graduation." Of course she did. And she was honored to hear her name mentioned in his valedictorian speech. 4 years later, she received another such announcement. It too was from Teddy. And there was a note inside that one. "Dear Mrs. Reiber, I graduate from Dartmouth next month, and I've been accepted to the medical school here. I just wanted to write and thank you. I wouldn't be here if you hadn't been there." And he signed it, "Love, Dana." Many years went by, and Mrs. Reiber was now 80 years old. When in the mailbox was a letter from a medical firm in Boston. She had no idea what this could possibly be when she opened it on that professional stationery to take this scribble note. "Dear Mrs. Reiber, they call me Dr. Stokes now. Can you believe it? I just wanted to thank you for your meeting. Wow.
This is more than a story about a half-empty bottle of perfume and a rhinestone bracelet with some of the stones. It's about someone who discovered, or maybe rediscovered, why we're here. What's our purpose? It's kind of obvious and simple, kind of profound and difficult. It's simply to love. This is my commandment, that you love one another. I have come not to be served, but to